Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
And it's a Wednesday before Thanksgiving. It's November 27, 2024. Great to be with you on EWTN here and every day. Thanks so much for tuning in. Wishing you a blessed and a peaceful and a safe Thanksgiving, especially if you're traveling over the holiday. Just be careful and give yourself plenty of extra time, and don't forget to pack that patience. Coming up in the program, I think you're really going to enjoy an interview on a brand new book about Carlo Acutis, soon to be a saint, and that'll happen next year. The Pope announced it just recently. Blessed Carlo Acutis, a saint in sneakers. Courtney Mears joins us. It's her book, and she'll talk all about it. We're also going to be speaking of Italy and saints and Jubilee and all that good stuff. Joan Lewis joins us, and we'll be looking at the audience message today and also plans as we get closer to the start of the Jubilee year. Let's take a look at the weather before I share some thoughts on Thanksgiving with you this morning. Rain and cold temperatures are on the way for some areas through the holiday weekend. A storm organizing today, actually this afternoon. This will happen in the Southern Plains and Mississippi Valley, spreading into the Appalachians overnight. They're saying Denver could see 3 inches of snow today. And on Thanksgiving, rain will fall from the southeast to the northeast, but conditions remaining dry for most of the rest of the country. High winds expected on Friday, causing some disruptions at airports in the Midwest, while lake effect snow can hamper travel in parts of the Great Lakes region, and that will happen over the weekend. So I wanted to share with you this beautiful, it's kind of a poem, I guess. It's a summary of things for which to be thankful. And just let me say I'm thankful for so much. I'm thankful for, first and foremost, Jesus, yay, Jesus, and the church. I'm thankful for a husband who prayed me back into the church and never gave up on us. I'm thankful for the opportunity I have to preach the good news to you and teach as best I can by the grace of God on the air every day here at EWTN and Ave Maria Radio. I'm blessed by all the people and grateful for all the people, my wonderful producer Andrew, all the people that work so hard at EWTN and Ave Maria to bring you 24/7 Catholic programming. Just a few of the things for which I'm grateful. I'm grateful for the experience of being able to share all about the faith through the eyes of living in Italy and traveling around Italy and getting close up and personal with the saints and all that good stuff. More on that a little bit later. But this is a really cool summary. It's been around for a while. It's called You Are Blessed If. So before we hit the news in about 2 minutes, I will share this with you quickly. Going through life, it seems our focus is on all the things we don't have. We pay scant attention to the blessings we already possess. Do you acknowledge, this summary asks, do you acknowledge those blessings each day, or do we take them for granted? If you do take some for granted, we need a reality check. Next time you feel that life is unfair, take a closer look at the blessings. If you have food in the fridge, clothes on your back, a roof over your head, and a place to sleep, you are richer than 70% of the world. If you have a little money in the bank or in your wallet, maybe some spare change in a dish, you are among the world's top 12% of the most wealthy. If you own your own computer, you're part of only some 5%+ in this world who do. If you woke up this morning with more health than illness, you are more blessed than many who will make it through the day. If you have never experienced fear in battle, loneliness in prison, the agony of torture, or the pain of starvation, you are ahead of over 700 million souls on this earth. And if you have the ability to attend a church of your choice without fear of arrest, torture, or death, you are envied by more than 3 billion plus on the planet. And if you can read, you are blessed. There are more than 2 billion people who can't. So as this summary says, and I wish I had an author for this beautiful prayer or poem, but I can send you the link and you can read it over and meditate and pray about it yourself. They wrap it up by saying, hold your head up high, smile and be thankful for the blessings, no matter how small you think they are. To all those who live in true poverty, fear, and despair, you are rare and you are unique. And let's be thankful for the opportunity to help people who need our support as well. 4 minutes past the hour now. It is a Wednesday before Thanksgiving, November 27, 2024. Let's get started with the news. And don't forget, this program and this news brought to you by our friends at House of Joppa, houseofjoppa.com. More than 100 members of Congress asking the Government Accountability Office, or GAO, to investigate the amount of federal funding given to abortion providers on a national level and international as well. This looking at over the past 3 years, including Planned Parenthood Federation of America funding and its affiliates. Catholic News Agency says 112 members of Congress have actually signed the letter, which was written on November 22nd and spearheaded by House Pro-Life Caucus co-chair Rep. Chris Smith of New Jersey, Senator Marsha Blackburn from Tennessee, Representative Robert Aderholt from Alabama, and Representative Claudia Tenney from New York. 81 House members and 31 senators signing that letter, including top leaders such as House Speaker Johnson, House Majority Leader Steve Scalise, and incoming Senate Majority Leader John Thune. A 2023 report found that from 2019 to 2021, the government of the U.S. provided $1.8 billion in federal funding to abortion providers, including Planned Parenthood and MSI Reproductive Choices. At the Vatican, Lisa Zangarini tells us the bishops of the Regional Episcopal Conference of North Africa releasing a message calling on political leaders in the Middle East to embrace the courage of humility to stop the spiraling of violence in the region and urge other nations to stop supplying weapons to the warring parties.
The war in the Middle East and its impact on the small Catholic communities in North Africa were among the several topics discussed last week by the North African bishops, who at the closing of their assembly issued a message calling on their churches to dedicate the upcoming Advent season to praying for peace in the region. In the message, the bishops decried the devastating consequences of the conflict in the Holy Land, which has resulted in countless victims, displaced people, and massive destruction, with a suffering population being deprived of essential needs like food and medical care. The bishops also strongly deplored the ongoing illegal colonization or the annexation of Palestinian territories in the West Bank, which has not been spared by the violence. They stated that in no case can the Bible be used to legitimize the colonization and annexation of a territory that belongs to a people who only aspire to live in justice and peace. Affirming their unwavering commitment to peace against all wars, violence, and any act of terrorism, the bishops of North Africa first appealed to the leaders of the countries involved in the conflict. They assured their prayers that the heads of government may have the courage of humility, sincerely listening to each other's suffering and rejecting all hatred, any desire for destruction, spirit of vengeance or domination. They also urged other nations to commit to ensuring a peace agreement instead of supplying weapons to the warring parties.
President Biden, meanwhile, is announcing a ceasefire between Israel and Hezbollah. He said the deal was reached with help from France, ending the fighting in Lebanon. The Iran-backed militant group has been fighting with Israel within Lebanon since the Hamas attack on Israel on October 7th of last year. And Mark Mayfield tells us President-elect Trump's case over his alleged mishandling of classified documents has now been officially dismissed.
The move in federal appeals court on Tuesday ends special counsel Jack Smith's prosecution of Trump a day after the case over his alleged efforts to overturn the 2020 election was also dropped. The documents case centered around accusations that Trump kept national defense information at his Florida home after he left office. Smith moved to have the cases dropped due to a Justice Department policy that a sitting president can't be prosecuted.
Donald Trump, meanwhile, announcing more cabinet nominations yesterday. He rounded out his health team by announcing Dr. Jay Bhattacharya as his next director of the National Institutes of Health. A doctor who co-authored an open letter opposing COVID lockdowns will be working alongside Robert F. Kennedy Jr. He's been tapped to lead the Department of Health. Trump also says Vince Haley, his speechwriter and attorney in training, will be the next chief of the Domestic Policy Council. Finally, he nominated former White House economic advisor Kevin Hassett to lead the National Economic Council. And Donald Trump is enjoying a bump in favorability since winning a second White House term earlier this month, while figures for outgoing President Biden sank to a four-year low. That's according to a new poll. An Emerson College poll finding both men trending in opposite directions. Trump's favorability jumping 6 points to 54%. after the election. Joe Biden's, on the other hand, dipping 36%. Disapproval of Biden remains steady at 52%, according to that new poll. And the Texas Land Commissioner says she is working with the Trump administration, as Tammy Trujillo tells us, to find room on the border to build a facility that would hold illegal immigrants caught in mass deportation raids.
It will be named after murder victim Jocelyn Nungery, whose family was on hand for the announcement.
We're going to do right by her and make sure her legacy lives on.
That's Nungery's grandmother, Jackie. 12-year-old Jocelyn was walking to a convenience store in Houston when she disappeared. Her body was found in a creek earlier this month. Two undocumented men from Venezuela are accused of killing the girl. They're now being held for trial on capital murder charges. It's not clear where in Texas the deportation facility would be built or who will pay for the construction.
Mexico and Canada are warning President-elect Trump, meanwhile, that 25% tariffs he's pledged to impose on goods in their countries will harm their economies as well as U.S. businesses.
Mexico's president has suggested that her country could retaliate with tariffs of its own and reiterated that Mexico has done a lot to stem the flow of migrants. Canada's Prime Minister Justin Trudeau says he spoke to Mr. Trump on the phone, describing it as a good call.
Michael McCann reporting also that Donald Trump says he plans to slap an additional 10% tariff on all products entering the country from China. In a Truth Social post, Trump accused China of shipping massive amounts of drugs, including fentanyl, into the United States. A federal agency planning to measure radiation levels in Washington ahead of the inauguration of President-elect Trump. The Department of Energy's National Nuclear Security Administration will begin low-level flights to the downtown area on Monday. The flights will continue through December 13th. The agency is saying the measurements will help protect public health and safety during the inauguration. Monica Nelson tells us that there's new information, new research just out on the brain connected to concussions in high school football players.
A research team examined neurological data on 91 high school football players, and 10 were diagnosed with a concussion. They compared pre- and post-season data on the players, and it reveals that players with a concussion showed a definite slowing of their brain activity compared to players who did not have one. Researchers say the slowdowns were highlighted in poorer scores on tests that gauge their cognition.
The Walt Disney Company will be paying more than $43 million to settle a discrimination lawsuit. That lawsuit alleging multiple female employees at Disney were being paid less than their male counterparts in the same role. An analysis of the company from 2015 to 2022 found women at Disney were paid less than similarly situated men by an average of 2%. Disney has disputed those numbers, and on Monday, though, Disney agreed to pay just over $43 million to settle the lawsuit. And Michael Kastner tells us TV star Wendy Williams has reportedly taken a turn for the worse in her battle with dementia.
And away we go.
Love you, Wendy.
All I know is how to be famous.
The former host of The Wendy Williams Show was diagnosed with dementia last year. In recent court memos obtained by USA Today, lawyers for the 60-year-old say she's become cognitively impaired and permanently incapacitated. They're pursuing legal action against A&E Networks for a docuseries about Williams that was released earlier this year.
Did you see a neurologist to find out if I'm crazy?
Mm-hmm.
They accuse the network of taking advantage of Williams in what they call the cruelest, most obscene way possible for their own financial gain.
The Better Business Bureau is launching a stress-free shopping campaign before Black Friday this week. Communications VP Cynthia Levin says you can avoid stress by reading the fine print.
It's also important to keep in mind the refund policies around this time of year because they do change. Some stores extend it and let you return things up until February. Some stores shorten it and only let you return things for a week or 2 weeks.
And she says do your homework to avoid the fake merchandise peddled online and watch out for phishing scams. And Thanksgiving travel is already underway, with AAA predicting that around 80 million of us will venture at least 50 miles from home between today and next Monday. This traveler speaking about his international travel plans for Thanksgiving.
So we're going to Cabo. We're headed out. It's going to be the first Thanksgiving where we're not eating turkey and gravy. It's going to be a little switch up, but hopefully we have some fajitas on the beach and enjoying some sun for this Thanksgiving.
Some travelers will be heading off into rainy weather and heavy snow, as we mentioned earlier. So packing patience is also highly recommended. While most holiday travelers will be hitting the roads to get where they are going, TSA expecting to screen 18.3 million airline passengers between today and the Monday after Thanksgiving. If those numbers pan out, it would turn out to be the busiest Thanksgiving travel period on record. And more than $300,000 worth of fake money, as Sara Lee Kessler tells us, speaking of airports, has been seized at Kennedy International Airport in the Big Apple.
Customs and Border Protection officers plus U.S. Secret Service agents made the bust on November 18th, but are just telling us about it now. A 26-year-old man arriving from Ecuador was smuggling the funny money, but it's no laughing matter. The feds say it looked remarkably real, and the criminals used the counterfeit cash to rip off stores, pay for narcotics, and to finance terrorism and attacks against our financial systems. They're warning consumers and retailers to look closely at banknotes during transactions to make sure they're the real deal.
Almost 16 minutes past the hour. Thanks for tuning in to EWTN on this Wednesday before Thanksgiving, November 27th. Just a reminder regarding the weather, if you're traveling this weekend or just want to know what it's going to be like if folks are coming to visit you. Rain and cold temps on the way for some areas through the holiday weekend. A storm organizing this afternoon in the southern plains of Mississippi Valley and spreading into the Appalachians overnight. Denver expected to get about 3 inches of snow today on Thanksgiving. Rain will fall from the southeast to the northeast. Conditions remaining dry for most of the rest of the nation. High winds expected tomorrow, or actually Friday, could cause some disruptions at airports in the Midwest, while lake effect snow could hamper travel in parts of the Great Lakes region over the weekend. So there you go. And speaking of travel, if you're thinking about traveling to Italy for the Jubilee year, you may want to grab a copy of this book all about Carlo Acutis. We will talk about it with the author. Up next, the title of the book is Blessed Carlo Acutis, A Saint in Sneakers. We'll be right back.
Ave Maria Radio's Good News Cruise is more popular than ever. Every year, couples testify how their marriages are revitalized and transformed. The 2026 cruise is already three quarters full, so if you want to join, now is the time. Special guests include musicians Andrea Bocelli, Matt Maher, Sarah Kroger, and John Ignatie, as well as hosts from Ave Maria Radio. Fun, romance, devotion. Go to AveMariaRadio.net and click on the travel tab to find out more.
People ask how they can care for older family members who can't fully care for themselves. One answer is Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care. Visiting Angels assists adults nationwide with 600 locations to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Their caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meals, and light housework. Services are provided up to 24 hours per day, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. More information, including franchise opportunities, is on the web at visitingangels.com.
Catholic Connection is sponsored by House of Joppa. House of Joppa's mission is to share the beauty of our one holy Catholic and apostolic faith in our homes through Catholic home decor, art, candles, statues, rosaries, and Catholic jewelry. They're gifts designed to help you live out your Catholic faith. For more information, go to houseofjoppa.com. That's House of Joppa, JOPPA.com.
More of Catholic Connection coming up on EWTN and Ave Maria Radio.
This show is underwritten in part by the following nonprofit company.
My dear brothers and sisters, I'm Bishop Gerald Vinke of the Diocese of Salina in Kansas. This year, you can create a Christmas miracle for a child growing up in the extreme poverty of a developing country. By donating to Send a Box of Joy, you will surprise a child with what could be the first Christmas gift of his or her life. You can bless a child today by donating at boxofjoy.org.
Well, I'm so excited to have Courtney Maris on with us. She's an author and a journalist, and she's based in Rome. And her book, as we mentioned earlier, Blessed Carlo Acutis, A Saint in Sneakers. She's a graduate of Harvard, and she's reported from news bureaus on three continents and published more than 1,600 articles, but who's counting on the Vatican, the Globe, Catholic Church, and International Religious Freedom. Currently a Rome correspondent for our very own Catholic News Agency and EWTN News. Courtney, I know you're going to be in Rome for Thanksgiving, sweetie, but happy Thanksgiving to you, and congratulations on the book.
Thank you very much. Happy Thanksgiving to you.
All right, so let's dive in, because we were just talking during the break about Blessed Carlo. What a special thing that he's going to be named a saint. But let's talk about the book. What prompted you to think about writing a book about this amazing young man?
Yeah, well, I first remember hearing Carlo's story when I first arrived in Rome in 2018. And I remember being just fascinated by the fact that there was a computer coding teenager born in the 1990s who is on the path to sainthood. And for me, being based in Italy as a Vatican journalist, I was kind of in the right place at the right time. I was able to attend Carlo's beatification mass in Assisi in 2020 at a time when Americans weren't allowed to travel to Italy for tourism. And there I remember seeing, you know, so many books written about Carlo in Italian, but at the time there wasn't anything written about him in English yet. And his story was one that, you know, I wanted more people to know about, because he really shows us what holiness can look like in the 21st century.
Yeah, and I also think, and you know this well, I also think that with all the issues we have with media today and all the separation and divide it causes, he really used it to bring people, especially Catholics, together, didn't he?
Yeah, that's right. You know, Carlo shows us that it's not necessary to unplug completely from the modern world to remain faithful. But I also, you know, I think there's a reason why Pope Francis has put him forward as a model for young people of what holiness can look like in today's modern society that's rapidly changing with technology, with social media, cell phones. One of the things that I think Carlo really teaches us is that, you know, he loved computers, he loved the internet, he loved technology, but he didn't get lost in an online world. You know, he was very present to the people around him, and he was very devoted to the Eucharist, and in particular, you know, and he attended daily mass as a high school student and as an elementary school student. And I think for him, prayer was really the great secret of his life. And by being rooted in the sacraments, especially, you know, daily Eucharist, confession, prayer of the Rosary, that kind of gave him the graces to approach technology in a healthy way. And I think that's a great lesson we can all learn from Carlo.
What's also interesting, and this is very similar to the situation with Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati, their families were not very faithful. And as a matter of fact, even after his first Holy Communion, his parents and his mom, especially, who's been interviewed by EWTN so many times, says that really Carlo saved her soul and got her going back to church. But, you know, Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati grew up in a similar situation, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I think a lot of people are surprised when they hear that a 15-year-old, you know, someone who died of cancer at 15 years old, like Carlo did, is going to be canonized. They might assume, you know, oh, he came from a really devout Catholic family. But that just wasn't the case with Carlo. His mother has attested that, you know, they attended Mass for weddings and funerals, but didn't even attend Mass every Sunday. But Carlo was first introduced to the faith in a very particular way by his nanny from a very young age, who was from Poland, who was likely the first person who kind of brought him to Mass and taught him how to pray the Rosary. And Carlo just took to it with such enthusiasm from a young age. And then it's really beautiful. He was a very curious person, you know, even as a kid, and was always asking a lot of questions. And his mother has shared how, you know, her little son was asking her all these questions about the faith and about God and about heaven. And as someone who, you know, wasn't a practicing Catholic, she was kind of struggling with how to answer mm-hmm. them. And so she sought out the help of a local priest to be able to answer her son's questions. And as she learned the more of the why behind Catholicism, she was reverted and came back to both his parents came back to the practice of the faith. And that's one of the extraordinary things about Carlo, had just this contagious faith that, you know, not only his parents, but other adults too, were converted and baptized to become Catholic after getting to know Carlo.
We're talking with Vatican journalist and author Courtney Mirez. The book is Blessed Carlo Acutis, a Saint in Sneakers. We'll put the link to the book on our archive section at Catholic Connection through AveMariaRadio.net. Okay, so you're based in Rome, and Joan Lewis, whom I'm sure you know and admire, is up after the interview with you. And I know Joan has said it over and over again. And the people I talk to on a regular basis at Rome, and I was just with the crew from EWTN finishing up taping with them yesterday, Anthony Johnson & Company. And I guess Rome is a little crazy now. What do you think this is going to do in terms of the attendance, for example, his canonization next year in April? And then also, I think, Assisi, don't you, Courtney, don't you think it's going to be busier than ever?
Oh, definitely. We've heard from Jubilee organizers that the city of Rome is expecting 30 million additional pilgrims to be coming to Rome in the year of 2025 for the Jubilee. And I think that the announcement of Carlo's canonization on April 27th during the Jubilee of Teenagers is only going to add to that, but it's in a good way. I think it's very exciting that we can have this great gathering of young people on two different occasions, actually, in the upcoming year. We have Carlo's canonization at the end of April, and then Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati, another great young person who is so enthusiastic about his faith.
And that's coming up in the end of July, early August. We have to take a break, Courtney. Hold on. Don't mean to interrupt, but we'll get interrupted by the satellite break, so we'll be right back.
Father Benedict Rochelle.
I'm going to tell you about the most abused woman I ever met in my life. You know her name as Roe, as in Roe versus Wade. I talked to Roe. This woman is a great penitent. This woman is a humble person who was deeply hurt. She was kneeling in the Basilica of the Immaculate Conception, the National Shrine in Washington, when I met her. And I thought, what reverence. I didn't know who this woman was, but she was praying with reverence, with great fervor. And I asked a priest friend of mine, who is that? And he says, oh, that's Roe. God is not mocked. This woman was abused by those who propagate the killing of children.
The people you know and trust are on EWTN.
Christ is the answer with Father John Ricardo.
I tell oftentimes an experience that I had at Divine Child when I was a young priest, 1 year ordained. First time I ever really saw the power of the Blessed Sacrament. And we simply exposed the Blessed Sacrament at the end of Mass one night. I encouraged people. I said, you know what? We've been in the habit of praying over people after Mass. I said, we're not going to do that this week. I'm just going to invite people to come on up and pray if they want to pray. And I put the Blessed Sacrament on the altar. I kneeled down. As I kneeled down, the church is in the sanctuary. The whole church. And as I'm looking at this, and I'm looking at the people there, and I'm looking at Jesus under the appearance of bread there, I saw the Lord standing on the altar, and he's just standing there looking out at all the people. And then at a certain point, he turned towards me, and he just bowed, and he says, don't you see how easy this is? You don't have to do anything. You just have to put me out. You put me out, and I will work.
Very exciting stuff indeed. And if you haven't been to the tomb of Carlo Acutis in Assisi at St. Mary Major, put it on your bucket list if you're heading to Italy next year at all for the Jubilee, because Assisi is only, under 2 hours from Rome. It's very easy to get to, just about 2 hours. And it's so beautiful. And you can also, of course, get up close and personal with San Francesco, Santa Chiara, and soon to be St. Carlo Acutis, who again is buried in Assisi at St. Mary Major Church. We're talking with Courtney Maris. She is a Catholic journalist based in Rome. Of course, her work is well known with all of our readers and listeners through Catholic News Agency. The book is Blessed Carlo Acutis, A Saint in Sneakers. So I asked you this during the break, but I don't think we had time for you to respond. Where's the best place to get the book?
You can find the book online. Of course, it's in the EWTN religious catalog. It's also on Amazon. And directly through Ignatius Press on their website.
Beautiful. So tell us, if from your perspective, someone doing the background check and all the writing and research you did for this beautiful book, what surprised you? I mean, you probably had, you had a basic understanding of who he was and his love of the Eucharist, but what surprised you about him the most when you were putting the book together, Courtney?
Being based in Italy, one of the fun things working on this book was that I was able to travel to Milan and Assisi and interview, you know, he only died in 2006, so it's a rare opportunity with a saint who's going to be canonized to be able to interview many people who knew him when he was alive. And I think one of the most surprising and just hope-filled interviews I did was with a grown man who converted from Hinduism to Catholicism after getting to know because of Carlo. His name was Rajesh Mohair, and he was from the island of Mauritius and a very Hindu family. His father was a Brahmin Hindu priest, and he studied in India, but he didn't have much exposure to Catholicism until he was hired by the Kudus family to serve as an au pair. And as part of that job, part of his role was to bring Carlo walking in Milan to and from school. And Carlo always liked to stop in the chapel to pray in front of the presence of Jesus in the tabernacle before and after school. And just in watching Carlo and his devotion, and then, you know, Carlo was a very outgoing kid, and he loved to talk about the things that he loved, which was the faith, heaven, and the real presence of Jesus in the Eucharist. And by having these conversations with this little kid, you know, Carlo was still in elementary school when he taught Rajesh how to pray the rosary. And that eventually led, through that witness, and also seeing Carlo's love for the poor was another key element, convinced Rajesh that, you know, this is the truth and how he wanted to live as well. And so he became baptized and fully entered into the Catholic Church. And that was a great moment of celebration for Carlo in particular. It was very excited. And it's just amazing witness to see a young boy, you know, elementary school, who just has the courage to talk and the love of God that's just contagious, that converts adults.
Yeah. Yeah. So we kind of tend to think, not that we're limiting it, but I guess in a way we are, because he's young, he's only going to influence the young, which he is doing in a big way, but he's also influencing, as you just pointed out, adults as well. Well, let me ask you about when he first became interested in the internet. He was naturally gifted. He just had that technical ability to be able to work so well with that, you know, medium. What was it that sparked his interest? Was there a particular event, or how did that come about, do you know?
Yeah, Carlo was an only child, and he was really a self-starter and very curious about, you know, learning new things. You know, he taught himself how to play a musical instrument. He also loved to play with a camcorder and make movies. And this just naturally, you know, with this curiosity about the internet was something that he showed even in elementary school. And his mother kind of saw this interest in her son and got him a computer coding textbook, and that's how he learned how to code. But one of the things Carlo's most known for is also his how he used the computer to help spread devotion and the knowledge of Eucharistic miracles. And that's another great thing we can learn from Carlo, is that, you know, he wasn't just online, right, you know, promoting himself on social media or posting selfies. You know, he was actually, he had this foresight to see it as, you know, a tool that he could use to learn more about the faith, first of all, and then to share it with others.
One of the beautiful things about his tomb, as you well know, is when you go to visit and pray before his relics in Assisi and St. Mary Major, is above the tomb they have on the wall these different reliefs carved into the wall, these different images from his life. And what really just moved me so much as a media person was when I saw that image of him sitting in front of a computer, a laptop, with a big smile on his face. And that is above his tomb on the wall in that church.
Yeah, I mean, it really just speaks to the significance of this upcoming canonization. In the 2,000-year history of the Catholic Church, he will be the first millennial saint, and he'll be the first computer coding saint, as well as, you know, the first saint that I know of buried in Nike sneakers. And so it is something that, you know, Carlo does show us, you know, what holiness can look like today. And that's a great witness that he provides.
Yeah, absolutely. The book is The Saint in Sneakers, Blessed Carlo Acutis, written by Courtney Mares from Catholic News Agency, an experienced journalist traveling the globe, but now based in Rome, writing about all things faith. In terms of the visit to Assisi, what are you hearing about? Because you and I know, having been there many times, and as I was telling you, I was just there last week for a shoot that I did with EWTN on my new book. It's a small church compared to Santa Chiara and San Francesco. And when we were there with our tour group in October, with our pilgrimage group, there was a long line to go past his tomb and to pray in front of the tomb. Have you heard anything about plans and how to handle the crowds or anything along those lines yet?
Yeah, that's something that the Bishop of Assisi is going to have to figure out. I remember also in 2020 with his beatification, there were very long lines. But I wouldn't be surprised if they, you know, have something up there, you know, have something planned. I remember during his beatification, it was very beautiful. They opened up churches all throughout the city with Eucharistic adoration because that was something that was such an important part of Carlo's life. One of his most famous phrases is, "The Eucharist is my highway to heaven."
I love that.
From Carlo that I love to think about, he said, you know, if you sit in front of the sun, you get a tan, but when you place yourself in front of the Eucharist, you become a saint. I think that there will be, you know, ample opportunity to, we saw that during as well, the National Eucharistic Congress in the U.S.
Yes.
Carlo was a big part of that. We had a relic of him, and his story was kind of present throughout the Congress. He was a patron of the Congress.
Yeah.
So I think we'll be hearing
Courtney, thank you.
Him.
Unfortunately, we're out of time. Thank you so much. We'll have to have you back on as we get closer to the canonization date in April, of course, sharing thoughts about Carlo Acutis with Courtney Mares, Vatican journalist, on her book, Blessed Carlo Acutis, the Saint in Sneakers. We'll be right back.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
I want you to have such confidence in the Lord that you'll find such hope at seeing the beauty of the Lord, the majesty of God. What did our Lord say, huh? If your sins are as scarlet, what? What's going to happen? They shall be made white as snow.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
The Catholic Catechism tells us that an evil end can corrupt an objectively good act. Our Lord pointed this out when he spoke of Pharisees praying and fasting, both objectively good acts, in order to be seen by men, a morally corrupt end which therefore corrupts all the actions. On the other hand, a good intention cannot justify an objectively evil action. One cannot turn fornication, a morally evil action in and of itself, by participating in it, even to save a life. Fornication is always wrong because it involves a disorder of the will, a moral evil. It is an error, the Catholic Catechism tells us, therefore, to judge an act merely by considering the intention that inspired it or the circumstances such as social pressure or emergency. The end never justifies the means. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Do you have a teenager at home who's full of potential? Too often the world is telling you to be content with mediocrity instead of raising respectful and responsible young adults with strong character. Hi, everybody. I'm Dr. Ray. If you need some help, not only to navigate those teen years, but to really enjoy them, check out my book, Standing Strong, Good Discipline Makes Great Teens, as well as my other books, on the store page at AveMariaRadio.net.
And we go back to Rome. We were just talking to Courtney, who is based in Rome with CNA and her book on Carlo. And now we go to Joan Lewis, whose book on a Jubilee year in Rome actually made it into a big article on Vatican News, talking about the Jubilee year coming up in 2025. Joan's Rome, and Joni is with us this morning. So congrats on the big plug for the book in that article. That was awesome.
Well, you know, it's wonderful because I, as the person basically responsible for that story, it's a story in which our Rome parish of St. Patrick's is mentioned, and then, as you said, the featuring my book, because it's right there in the sacristy. Anyway, Devin Watkins, who works for Vatican News, I'm sure you've heard, you know, he's a wonderful voice. And he did, as a matter of fact, the English commentary today on the papal audience in St. Peter's Square. But so Devin is a member of our parish council. He's been there for a while on different committees on the parish council. And I know that he and I were two people who talked in a recent meeting, not so much the parish council, but some of us on the council are doing our best to promote St. Patrick's for the Jubilee year. Because as I did mention on a Facebook post today, we began work Monday on renovating the room that has served as a bathroom and kitchen area. Is all pieces of plaster all over the floor now, because we took down the old bathroom. Two bathrooms will be installed, and one will be ready for handicap accessible. And then we're renovating the kitchen area, literally the sink. The legs on the left-hand side of the small sink area collapsed, and so our sink, the word sink was very, was the appropriate one to use because the left part of it sank right into the floor. Anyway, so the kitchen slash bathroom areas are being renovated. Also, actually, our secretary's office is being redone. It's not an office that, you know, visitors would generally see, but another thing on our agenda at St. Pat's for the Jubilee year is one of those stair lifts, because as you know, probably every church in Rome is 6, 8, 10, 15 steps off of the sidewalk level, and sometimes even many more than that, like St. Peter's. But St. Peter's has a ramp if somebody is obviously in a wheelchair, but we do not have that kind of space in the little garden area around our church to actually erect a ramp. It's a lot more work than it did, and you can't have a ramp going straight up. So we're going to have one of those stair chairs that will, anybody who has a, who comes in a wheelchair, they can get in, somebody will carry the wheelchair into the church, and then they can take that stair lift into the church, and there will be the, you know, the accessible facilities there. So it's a lot of work. It's very costly, but it's something that will bring us, you know, well down the road into the future, as well as serving all the American pilgrims and other, you know, English language, English-speaking Catholics, welcome them to this church in Rome. And I think we'll be probably unique, I'm going to say, in having like a bathroom for the handicapped. Now, I have not done any kind of historical survey of the city of Rome, but just the churches I've been in, I don't ever recall seeing, you know, bathrooms, yes, but I haven't seen handicapped. So we'll be out ahead of the crowd as far as that goes. And and then I mentioned on my Facebook post that I do have some copies left of my book on the Jubilee. And no, Teresa, the funny thing is, if you were to take out the chapters that I wrote on the Jubilee of Mercy, take out the papal documents, there was a chapter on the fact that those years ago, 2015 and 16, Catholics of Santa Susanna, we were no longer in that church, and we were still looking for a new home. So, you know, I could take out the Jubilee event chapter and then take out the chapter on finding a new home, put in St. Patrick's information, and the book would be just as valuable today. Because, I mean, I bring you to Castel Gandolfo. I bring you around the major basilicas and other important churches in Rome. I bring you to the catacombs, to Vatican City State. So it's a wonderful guidebook, and the information I give, I mean, that doesn't change. So, you know, I have some...
You know, I'm so glad. One of the reasons I loved your book was because when you... And you said Castel Gandolfo. I think... no trip to Rome is complete without going to the Vatican sites there and to enjoy that little town and just to get out of the city, especially when it's going to be so crazy. That's one of the things that I mentioned. As you know, you endorsed my latest book. Super important to understand that there's things to see outside of Rome connected to the Vatican, and something that would be really cool for the Jubilee year.
Yeah. No, it's such a beautiful place. It's papal. Well, Pope Francis never went there. He never had any kind of a fondness for Castel Gandolfo, which is such a shame. I mean, it's been the summer papal residence for popes for for centuries and has its own beautiful history, gorgeous gardens, beautiful grounds. The view of Lake Albano is absolutely stunning and peaceful. And what I love about it, actually, in square acres, it is bigger than Vatican City State right across the street from my house. But the part where the popes live is so much smaller. It's just kind of more homey. Can I say that about a papal palace?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Just the beautiful grounds. You can easily picture any pope sitting on a beautiful bench overlooking Castle, overlooking Lake Albano and saying his daily rosary. So it's just such a beautiful spot that it can be visited today, but my heart is still broken. I get tears in my eyes when I think that the Papal Palace, the summer residence, is now a museum. And it's just, just to me, is this sterile place that once, you know, you get to see the bedroom that was John Paul's and Benedict's. And that, I just stood there almost paralyzed. I didn't want to be there. You know, it's their bedroom. I don't want to be here.
Right.
Anyway,
right.
So, but it is a beautiful place and a historic place and amazing gardens. And those gardens were opened to Jews by Pius XII at the time of persecution. And many, many children were born in the papal bedroom. He gave the bedroom over to any mothers who were about to have children. And a huge number of boys, by the way, that were born in the papal bedroom, Castel Gandolfo, were named Eugenio, which was, you know, Pius XII, his name was Eugenio Pacelli. So lots of great stories associated with that. But
yeah.
Jubilee year is almost upon us, and you would never know it. You and I talked about this last week. Everything in Rome is still filled with scaffolding.
Yeah.
Piazza Navona, Piazza del Popolo, the statues of Peter and Paul in St. Peter's Square, and just so much scaffolding all around. We're going to need not a minor, but a couple of major miracles to have Rome be ready in the sense of scaffolding down, you know.
Because he's going to technically he's getting everything underway at Christmas Eve and then Christmas Day, and then of course just over a month away, right?
I mean Teresa,
two months,
a month from today, we can say, gee, Christmas was 2 days ago. and the Jubilee year began Christmas Eve, so the Pope will open a holy door that Christmas Eve. Of course, the Basilica of St. Peter's. And then the very next day is a big holiday in Italy. It's the Feast of Santo Stefano. And that's as big a day as Christmas. Italians have that day off. And the Pope will say Mass at Rebibbia Prison and open a holy door there. And it will be the only holy door not associated with a papal basilica. So that ought to be kind of interesting. And his whole schedule was laid out this week for the whole Christmas period. And it will end on July 12th with the Feast of the Baptism of Our Lord and the Pope baptizing babies, as he always does on that feast day in the Sistine Chapel. So we have a lot to look forward to, and massive numbers of people are expected for the Holy Year. People are also always asking me, I don't know if they're asking you, but, you know, should they come in the Holy Year, and if so, when? And I'm going to be real honest. Yes, huge numbers are expected. So if you don't mind crowds, and if you don't mind waiting in line for some things you can reserve, like the Vatican museums, but if you don't mind waiting in line, come. It'll be a great year for, a great year for learning more about your faith, for visiting places associated with our faith. And I tell people, if people with children are going to have to come in the summer because that's when school's out. But, you know, if you can honestly avoid Easter, stay in your own diocese for Easter, if you can stay home in the summer, come in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
There are major events. All you have to do is go online, folks. Look at Google, the official site of the Vatican Jubilee, and look at the calendar. There's probably two or more events a week. the jubilee of students, the jubilee of musicians, the jubilee of family, et cetera, et cetera. So if you want to maybe come for a particular jubilee, fine. But I think the fall is when you're going to see fewer numbers than you'll see big ones, but fewer numbers than you would in the summer, or you certainly would around Easter week. So,
well, I have to tell you, yesterday we were wrapping up I'm doing an EWTN Learn series on my new book, Italy Shrines and Wonders, and we were in well, a number of places, but we were also in Orvieto, and there was one tour group in Orvieto yesterday, one. And we had permission to film inside the Duomo, which was amazing, and there was barely anybody in there, maybe two other people besides our crew and the staff at the church there. But just the idea of coming later in the year, the weather is still very comfortable. It was very, yeah. I don't know how it was in Rome yesterday, but in Umbria, it was very comfortable in the high 50s, low 60s. Again, yeah. I totally agree with you. And even if there's no special event within the event of the Jubilee, because it's so much more enjoyable and you're going to get so much more out of it if you can travel outside of those heavy tourist times, such as Easter in the summer, not to mention the heat in the summer, which is going to add to, you know, frustrations and whatnot and difficulties, especially if you have children with you. If you're going to go with the Jubilee year, you might somehow, if you can, bite the bullet a bit and see if you can get the kids out of school even for a few days, you know, with some exceptions or whatnot, because it's so worth it. It is so worth it to me, right?
Well, there's always, you know, if you don't want to be part of a big event or can't, there's always the Wednesday general audience. You can get tickets to that. And then also the Sunday Angelus, you can, Pope is this little white dot at a window as you're standing in the square. But Teresa, our time goes by so fast, but we've got to let people know about the really big announcement made today at the Wednesday general audience. At the very end of the audience, the Pope announced that starting next week, the weekly audience catechesis and the language readings to pilgrims will be in Chinese. That is just huge. I know. And so that makes it the second non-European language to be, because Arabic came into being at the general audience in October 2012. So we'll have next week Arabic and then Chinese. There's just, I mean, you and I could probably speak for 10 minutes on why that would be so important. You know, Chinese Catholics, the ones we know about, are not very large in numbers. It's the one we don't know about that could be very huge in numbers. Plus, as you know, in 2018, the Vatican signed a two-year agreement with China on the naming of bishops, and that was renewed every 2 years, just recently renewed, 2024. And so there's this, the Vatican is looking towards the future of, I don't think I can honestly say opening doors at the in China, but Tracy, you never know. You just never know.
Mm-hmm.
Prayer, persistence, diplomatic efforts, now the inclusion of Chinese, and the people who are maybe underground, silent, we don't know about them, Chinese Catholics, maybe they're going to find a way now to listen to and to look at the Chinese, because it'll be published on the Vatican website as well after the audience. So a very, very big, important event. And by the way, announced by the Pope at the end of the audience and before the audience this morning, the Holy Father met with Antony Blinken, our Secretary of State.
I saw that. We're out of time, but I'm going to direct people to your blog, and I'm wishing you a blessed Thanksgiving. And we're going to have a great day tomorrow with your friends there in Roma. Joan, always a pleasure, and we'll be talking to you, God willing, next Wednesday. And I'll be back in the States, God willing. Talk to you then. Happy Thanksgiving.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria Mutual Funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria Mutual Funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria Mutual Funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
People ask how they can care for older family members who can't fully care for themselves. One answer is Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care.
Visiting Angels assists adults nationwide with 600 locations to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Their caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meals, and light housework. Services are provided up to 24 hours per day, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. More information, including franchise opportunities, is on the web at visitingangels.com.
The following program is brought to you in part by MyCatholicWill.com. Surveys show that more than half of Americans do not have a will. At MyCatholicWill.com, it takes as little as 15 minutes to write your will and secure a legacy of faith. MyCatholicWill.com is the exclusive online destination for creating a Catholic will. The process of writing a will is simple and now more accessible than ever. MyCatholicWill.com, a legacy of faith for those you love.
This show is underwritten in part by the following nonprofit company.
My dear brothers and sisters, I'm Bishop Gerald Vinke of the Diocese of Salina in Kansas. This year, you can create a Christmas miracle for a child growing up in the extreme poverty of a developing country. By donating to Send a Box of Joy, you will surprise a child with what could be the first Christmas gift of his or her life. You can bless a child today by donating at boxofjoy.org.
Of course, we will be taking Thursday and Friday off for the Thanksgiving holiday. Hope you get those days off too. You have a blessed and a peaceful Thanksgiving, and good Lord willing, we'll be talking to you back from the United States of America. Deacon Dom and I travel home on Saturday. Pray for travel. We'll be praying for you. Happy Thanksgiving. Ciao, ciao.
You've been listening to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo. Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Our producer is Andrew Kruchek. For copies of this program or for more information, visit AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net. Thanks for listening and join us next time for another edition of Catholic Connection.